Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game this upcoming weekend against the Oakland Raiders. But before we get to that, we have a lot more to get to, including Mike Daniels' contract extension. We'll talk about that with our guest.
Interview.
Nathan Yockey of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Glad you could join us as always. Nathan, if we talk about this contract extension signed by Mike Daniels, I saw the report card grade at ProFootballFocus.com giving the Packers an A grading them out compared to other contract extensions signed across the NFL. So why the A grade?
First off, as I've said a couple of times on the show over these past few weeks, Daniels has had a great season this year. Right now we have him as the fifth best interior defender, regardless of 4-3 or 3-4 defenses. We just released our Pro Bowl picks this morning, and he was one of the Packers to make the Pro Bowl on our Pro Bowl team. So definitely having a great season. And then what brought him all the way up to an A in the report card is because the Packers are basically getting a good deal on that contract. Daniels is playing a lot better than some players who are making more money than him, even after this extension. Just below Daniels in our rankings is Ndamukong Suh, someone who's making roughly twice as much money as Daniels. Marcell Dareus, another player who signed a contract extension this offseason. Dareus signed a bigger contract, although Daniels is playing better than Dareus. A couple other guys, McCoy in Tampa Bay, Lodi Nada, Clayus Campbell, Cameron Hayward, all players who are making more money per year, more guaranteed money than Daniels. But Daniels is outplaying all of those players. So the combination of Daniels playing the best football we've seen from a Packers defensive lineman in a while, mixed with how good the contract is why we gave him an A.
We'll have more breakdown on the Daniels extension later in the show, so stay tuned for that. But Nathan, if we take one last look back at this game this past Sunday for the Green Bay Packers, after the performance by both Eddie Lacy and James Starks, I was wondering how they stack up as kind of a 1-2 punch for running backs in the NFL. What other teams in the NFL have the highest rated pair of running backs?
If everyone in the league was healthy, then we'd see from Seattle and Pittsburgh some really good 1-2 punches. But we've seen plenty of good running backs go down with injury this year. So just looking at the ones that are healthy still, Tampa Bay has the best 1-2 punch by a good amount. Doug Martin, he's the best healthy running back this year. He has the second most rushing yards. He's averaging 5.1 yards per carry. And 50 players have missed tackles on his carry so far this year, which is most in the league. And then his backup, Charles Sims, who sometimes gives Martin a break, and as well, Sims goes in on third down. He's averaging 4.6 yards per attempt, so he's also doing good running with the ball. And then in third down situations, he has the seventh most receiving yards, and he only has one drop this year, so the Buccaneers pair is the best. Buffalo isn't too far behind with LeSean McCoy and Carlos Williams. And then the Packers, I would say, are one of about four teams fighting for that third to sixth spot. So the Packers definitely up there, but there are a few teams who are better.
The guy opening up holes for Eddie Lacy and James Starks, John Kuhn, what impact did he have on the running game? Because I know the Packers used him an unusually high amount this past Sunday against the Cowboys.
Yeah, in the past, the Packers have rotated drives where they either have a tight end on the field with their three wide receivers or have John Kuhn in. And in this past game, John Kuhn played a bit more, but I don't think he had a great game in this one. He definitely had a couple of good blocks where he was able to make it to the second level, seal off a linebacker or safety to help the run. But for every one good run he had, he would have one or two poor blocks where he was either pushed into the point of attack or someone was able to shed the block and make a tackle. He also had a false start in there, which didn't help his overall grade. But really, John Kuhn, someone who these past 2 years, he was one of the best run blocking fullbacks in the league, but this year, with the limited playing time in this game, he just hasn't been showing it so far.
I thought Randall Cobb had his best game in weeks against the Cowboys. I noticed that they were playing zone, and I thought maybe that had something to do with it. But what did you notice from Cobb's performance this past weekend?
Sure. First off, his receiving numbers were the best they've been in a while. A lot of that was due to a large part of the Packers running some screen plays where Cobb was able to make the catch and then make some moves after the catch, which is what he's best at doing. And then also a catch out of the backfield too. So he had those good plays, a lot of good first downs, but then he also had two drops in the game, which brings him to 7 since week 9, which is the third most in the league. So while he was making the good plays, he was still making some of the bad ones that he has been making recently. But even outside of his receiving, he had a couple of decent runs in this one. He did a nice job run blocking and then had a nice screen block as well. So Cobb has never been someone necessarily known for his blocking. So it was good to not only see that he had some good plays mixed with the bad in receiving, but was also able to make a good impact in the run game as well.
Another wide receiver, I couldn't help but notice the drop-off of Davante Adams. He went from being targeted 20 times just a few weeks ago to just twice this past week. Is there anything we can attribute this to?
I think it's a combination of things. Part of it was just the matchup with the Cowboys. Half of Adams' snaps was going up against Brandon Carr, who was the Cowboys' best, or has been the Cowboys' best cornerback, with Byron Jones playing free safety. Other slot cornerbacks were really the place to attack for the Packers, and that's where they threw the ball more. And then it was also just Adams has been ineffective these last few weeks. The past 2 weeks, he had 6 catches compared to 4 drops, so that's never good to see. The Packers, the past few weeks, have been subbing him out a little bit more to see how some of the other young wide receivers can play. So I think it's just a combination of Adams not playing as well, so they don't want to throw him the ball as much, as well as this specific matchup against the Cowboys.
We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, on the offensive line, can you quantify the difference of having Brian Bulaga and TJ Lang in the lineup compared to Lane Taylor and Don Barclay the previous week?
Sure. That's a little easier to do in pass blocking. TJ Lang and Brian Bulaga were averaging about 4 pressures per game this season combined, while Lane Taylor and Don Barclay are at 11 pressures allowed per game combined. So that's 7 more plays where Aaron Rodgers is under pressure. That'll typically mean about 1 more sack per game, another time or 2 where Rodgers is getting hit. And then when Rodgers is under pressure, he's only completing 42% of his passes compared to when he's not under pressure. He's completing 69% of his passes. So that also means probably about 2 more passes of Aaron Rodgers will fall incomplete because of the blocking. So, and also, Rodgers has a higher interception rate when he's under pressure, so higher likelihood a pass will get intercepted. So definitely a noticeable impact in the pass game. In the run blocking game, it's a little less clear. It is a difference of about 7 plays per game of a block going from a bad block to an okay block or an okay block to a good block. And while not all blocks are equal, since sometimes a good run block is the difference between a 1 yard gain and an 80 yard gain, other times it doesn't equal any more rushing yards. But just going by averages, it's probably costing the Packers about 25 rushing yards per game when they have Lane Taylor and Don Barclay, and compared to TJ Lang and Brian Bulaga.
I'll take that any day. If we turn our attention, Nathan, to the defensive side of the football, the Packers obviously had some struggles giving up several long runs. Who is to blame on defense for allowing these?
Unfortunately, basically anyone that I said had a good game in the run game last week had a bad one this week. Jake Ryan a couple of times was out of positions, or he was successfully blocked, although he did have at least a couple of nice tackles to make up for that. Clinton Dix, someone I said was the best run defense safety in the game. He didn't have any positive plays in this one. And then he also had a missed tackle and another play where he was blocked into the ground. Morgan Burnett, someone else. He was blocked inside a couple of times with the running back being able to get outside. So really, there was not many people that had a good game against the run either. Just LaTroy Guyon and Mike Pinnell. Everyone else was either average or below average. So a couple players who particularly stood out, and then most everyone not having that positive of an impact.
Yeah, mentioning HaHa Glenn Dix getting blocked by Lael Collins. That was quite the play from the Cowboys offensive lineman. On the positive side, though, I thought that Sam Shields and Demaryius Randall did a good job limiting the damage by Dez Bryant this past week. Shields, obviously, before he had to exit the game, but how would you say they did in coverage?
I wasn't all that impressed by Shields' game in this one. His stats look great. He just allowed 2 catches for 11 yards and had an interception. But the grade for his interception wasn't that great, since it was more him being in the right place at the right time with the ball ending up there, more so than him making a great play. He had a defensive holding penalty, which doesn't show up in the stats, but is definitely a negative play against him. And then there was another deep pass where Shields was beat. Dez Bryant just dropped the ball. So had Dez Bryant just caught the ball, his stats would have looked a lot worse. I was more impressed by Randall in this one. He just allowed a 1 catch and then another that could have been caught, but Dez dropped it. But then he also had a couple of good plays where he had close coverage, which helped prevent the catch. So overall, I would say it was probably more Dez Bryant dropping balls that stopped Dez Bryant a little more so than the Packers cornerbacks. But I was actually a little more impressed by Quentin Rollins in this one, who had no negative play and had a third down stop. So he's continuing to play well.
Yep, good play by the Packers rookie cornerbacks. It's something to be encouraged about for the future. Nathan, if we look ahead to this Packers-Raiders game on Sunday, this isn't an opponent the Packers see, but once every 4 years. So what players did the Packers have to be aware of this upcoming Sunday?
I think the Raiders are a team that are better than their record would indicate. Derek Carr has been playing like a clear top 10 quarterback this season, which is fairly impressive for a sophomore quarterback and a big step up from where he was last year. He's gotten a lot of help from his offensive line. That unit has been playing well, so I could see the Packers having a bit of trouble getting to Carr in this one. Michael Crabtree has stepped up from where he's been playing these past few years. And then Amari Cooper, of course, has been making plays as well, although he's also been dropping a lot of passes recently. So the Packers could get lucky there if Cooper continues his drop streak. On the defensive side of the ball, Khalil Mack, he's been the best edge defender in the league this year. Just had a wonderful game this past week with 5 sacks. So the Packers probably will need to give their tackles a little bit of help trying to stop Mack. Their defensive line in general has been playing very well. I added Dan Williams and Mario Edwards this past offseason, and both of them are having great seasons. So that'll definitely be an interesting matchup against the Packers' interior offensive linemen. So I could also see the Packers having trouble running the ball just due to how good these front four are doing. But then the Raiders do have a weakness at inside linebackers, so that can be a place that can be attacked in the passing game. They should have avoid cornerback David Amerson, who's having a decent season. And Charles Woodson is living up to his reputation right now. He's still playing well in the secondary. But outside of those two players, everyone else in that secondary, the Packers, can take advantage of if their passing game is doing well. So I think it'll be a difficult game for the Packers, but I think they are definitely capable of winning if they're having a good game.
Well, looking forward to it as always. And Nathan, we're glad to have you on the show as always. Thank you for joining us, and we'll break it down next Wednesday.
No problem. Enjoy the rest of the week.
All right. Take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us on the show as he does on a weekly basis during the season. Glad to have him joining us. Glad to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
It's only appropriate that we break down this Mike Daniels signing a little bit more, seeing that was the big news in the world of the Green Bay Packers. Pretty much it broke almost as soon as last Monday's episode ended. We went off air and all news broke that morning. We never had a chance to even discuss it on the show. But we do now. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has a breakdown on Daniel's deal. And the genius of it is that the Packers can count $2.4 million of his signing bonus, of a $12 million signing bonus, to this season, or what's left of this season, and then the rest of it prorated over the next 4 years. So basically, because the Packers signed him in season, they get to spread out Mike Daniels' signing bonus over the course of 5 years instead of 4 years. So they get to plunk a little, you know, a little more money into this year's salary cap, meaning they'll have a little bit more space in future seasons. So I think that was what the Packers really wanted to do when they, you know, with just three games left here, why they wanted to get done now and not wait until after the season and, you know, wait until free agency starts or anything like that. They obviously identified Mike Daniels as being a big part of the future. And we've talked about Mike Daniels on the show a lot. Basically, you know, his biggest worth is he's effective both against the run and against the pass. And he's the kind of player that can be a three-down player. Now, the Packers don't always do that because they pretty much, with all their defensive linemen, rotate them and keep them fresh. But you can, you know if it's crunch time, Mike Daniels will be out there on the field, and you can rely on him no matter if it's first and 10 or third and one. He's the type of guy that, you know, is really, really good, even despite having one of his worst games of the season this past Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys. Not that necessarily Mike Daniels looked bad, but he was, I would say, effectively neutralized by a very good Cowboys offensive line, especially their interior. So that's what happened this past Sunday. If we look at what's next, what impact does this signing have? I ranked the priorities for the Packers for their 2016 free agent class. And if we take a look at those, who's left? There's 14 players scheduled to become unrestricted free agents. I'm not talking about the, you know, restricted or exclusive rights. They're kind of in a different category. They have to adhere to different rules, things like that. But if you want to look at all 14 players, who's next? What's the next priority, the next player the Packers should sign? Maybe it doesn't exactly happen in this order. Sometimes they can make just a small signing that doesn't really impact the salary cap a little bit and then save the big signing for later. So, you know, not that these don't always happen in chronological order. But who's the biggest piece of the puzzle, at least as part of the 2016 free agent class? And I said it's nose tackle BJ Raji. He's the next guy. So another defensive lineman here. The Packers going to want to lock up in the offseason. Basically, I think what you're going to see here is BJ Raji. The Packers are going to reward him for taking a one-year contract, basically two consecutive seasons now. Kind of been prove-it contracts, except that in 2014, BJ Raji didn't really get a chance to prove it because he was on injured reserve. But I think this season he has. And I don't think the Packers are going to break the bank. It'll probably be a situation where BJ Raji will get paid pretty much on par what he does this year. I think he's getting, roughly $4 million this season. And I think just the Packers are going to give him a little bit more security. So instead of playing on another one-year contract, you're going to see him play on two, maybe three, something like that. So I think he's the kind of guy you want to lock up. And surprisingly, number two on the list, I have actually kicker Mason Crosby. Maybe you wouldn't think a kicker would be such a high priority. But the way he's bounced back from his season in 2012, I think he's, you know, the type of guy that, first of all, at kicker, you're not really worried as much about age. You know, he's already over 30 years old, and while that might be a detriment to some players, and it certainly is in the case of, like, James Jones, who I have ranked far down the list, I don't even anticipate the Packers signing him this offseason, really. I'm not ruling it out, but I don't think it's definitely a high priority. But, you know, he turned over 30 years old, and, you know, it's just such a different position at wide receiver where you're relying on that athleticism, and he just can't gain separation. Mason Crosby, you're really not worried about. If the Packers sign him to another three-year contract, there's no reason to think he can't, you know, play it out into his mid-30s and play pretty much just as well as he has this season, or kicked as well as he has this season. So, you know, I think Mason Crosby will get paid well for a kicker, but compared to other positions, I think he'll be a relative bargain. So I actually have him number two on the list. And after that, it's kind of interesting. If we look at the players coming up on their second contracts, and so I mean, we're not talking about the guys who are going to get their third or fourth contracts. Basically, the guys who signed their rookie deals and haven't had any chance to do anything since that point. I think you're looking at the next guys being cornerback Casey Hayward and linebacker Nick Perry. Both those guys going to be free agents in the offseason, but I don't think there's any guarantee they're going to be in a Packers uniform next year. The Packers probably would be happy to see them walk away with a big contract from another team, because it would mean they would get a compensatory draft pick in return. Not to say that they wouldn't welcome them back, but I just think the Packers would be like, you know, go ahead. If you can find some place where you can be a starter somewhere in the NFL, go after that opportunity. If you want to come back, we'll pay you probably less than you want. We'll take you back. But if there's opportunities for you to start and there's opportunities for you to make more money, go do it. So that, I think that's going to be the message to Casey Hayward and Nick Perry. So I have them somewhere, you know, higher, I guess, on the list of the priorities. I think we have Casey Hayward at number three in terms of that they'd welcome him back. But, you know, I don't anticipate it happening. And same thing with Nick Perry as well. He's further down the list, 6-7, something like that. So it's kind of interesting. I also wrote that Mike Daniels basically showed Eddie Lacy what's at stake as the team's next long-term priority, because basically, even though he's the next player, even though his contract doesn't expire until after the 2016 season, he might be the next, you know, player to get a second contract, even though it may not happen right now, it may not happen this offseason, I don't know. That's off in the distance a little bit, but because the Packers may pass on Casey Hayward and Nick Perry, Eddie Lacy may be next. And it probably, I think, provides Eddie Lacy with a little bit of incentive here. He saw what football is like, what it was taken away from him. I think, you know, Eddie Lacy probably took this signing to heart, being like, okay, Mike Daniels tries really hard, he practices really hard, he plays with fire, and look what happened to him. Now he's getting paid over $10 million a season. So that's what's at stake for Eddie Lacy, because he's, you know, making not even $1 million a year, I doubt it, yet on his rookie. Maybe he is. I forget what the breakdown is for second-round draft picks. But, you know, he's not making as much, certainly, as these guys who are on their second contracts now. And he may be next. So there's a lot of incentive here for Eddie Lacy to continue to work hard from here on out and not kind of relapse into that, you know, rut that got him in the doghouse, basically, when he broke curfew, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, that's kind of your breakdown of this Mike Daniels deal, what it means for the Packers and even other players going forward here. But other, you know, Packers news here, just some small items, I guess. The Packers can clinch a playoff berth with a win this upcoming Sunday. The NFL announced its playoff scenarios yesterday. And basically, that's all the Packers can do at this point is just simply clinch a playoff berth. They can't clinch the NFC North division. They can't clinch a home game. They can't clinch a bye or anything like that. All those are going to play out week 16, week 17 of the season. For right now, though, they could simply lock up, you know, their place in the playoffs, which is important. And they do it with simply winning their in. Now, there's a few ways they can qualify if they don't win. Namely, the two scenarios would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Washington Redskins would have to lose. So both those would have to happen. Or the Buccaneers and the Giants would have to lose. Both of them have to happen. I guess if you're a Packers fan, you're kind of cheering against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this weekend. Because that would come into play in both scenarios. You hope it doesn't have to come down to that. You just hope the Packers win and they take care of it themselves. They don't got to worry about what happens around them. And then you look forward to, after that, winning the division, getting a home game, getting a bye, things like that would be in the distance as far as the playoffs go. And one other minor news, the Raiders signed former Packers wide receiver Larry Pinkard to their practice squad, and you kind of look at it and you'd be like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Are they looking for inside intelligence, inside info on the Packers here? And, it went through my mind, but I think once you look at it a little bit closer, you look at it and be like, Larry Pinkard, okay, he was a undrafted free agent who was in training camp with the Packers. He was cut at the end of training camp and hasn't been anywhere else. So he's been on the street for basically 3 months now. And I'm not really sure. They might, try to pick as much of his brain as possible, but I'm not sure how much is there and how much they're going to get out of it. Basically, I think the Raiders, if they want inside information, they can look to the other players already on the roster. Charles Woodson, who was with the Packers for years and won a Super Bowl with them. Wide receiver Jeremy Ross, who actually played in the regular season with the Green Bay Packers. And general manager Reggie McKenzie. I don't know how much about the X's and O's he knows, but I think they would get more from those three guys than they might from Larry Pinkard. Good job for Larry Pinkard. He did a good job in training camp with the Packers. You kind of thought, well, he might be a guy the Packers might like to develop on the practice squad. I know an injury kind of complicated things there, and maybe that's why the Packers didn't keep him around. Anyway, just a notable signing happening mere days before these two teams meet as we look at the next segment of the show.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, I think the big thing you're looking forward to today is Sam Shields' progress in going through the concussion protocol. He's basically the only player to suffer an injury, a notable injury in this past Sunday's game against the Dallas Cowboys. Had to exit, did not return. And now you wonder what his status is going to be like for this Raiders game. He more than likely will appear on this week's injury report for the first time. It'll be released this week on Wednesday. And so you're wondering, is he back already? Has he cleared the protocol? Is he back at practice? What's his status? Is he full? Is he limited? I don't know. He may be back. He may not be back at all. It could be a case where he sits out today and is back tomorrow. That's what we're waiting to find out today. Head coach Mike McCarthy was asked during his Monday press conference the day after the game, the status of Sam Shields, and he said it's too early to tell. But I mean, that was now 2 days ago. Has anything changed in the interim? We'll find out. It didn't really look bad. When Shields kind of hit the ground there, but The concussions are so tricky. You don't really know, and if you start having a few of them, then things start, complicating matters, and it could end up be longer that it takes them to come back. So that's like I said, that's what we're waiting for today. Not a whole lot of answers right now, but we're looking for answers, and maybe we'll find out with the release of the Packers injury report and find out what he did at practice today, along with any other players listed for that matter. So that's what we're looking for on a Wednesday, and that'll do it for today's show of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us today. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us. And that'll do it, folks. We'll be back again on Friday previewing the Raiders game. So look to join us then, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. And my call to action, as always, if you've not done so already, the one small thing we ask of our listeners, give us a little Christmas present. Give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you could do that, we'd really appreciate it. Do us a solid. Helps us get the word out about the show. We'll see you, folks. Have a good Wednesday. We'll talk to you on Friday. On behalf of everybody at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV, I'm Brian Caribou. I leave you today with a song called, if I can find it here, In the Kitchen by Humphreys McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. Go, Pack, go.
It was cold in the kitchen and the lights were low as winter slowly stumbled home.